A peaceful afternoon in late July, 1998. While most are wrapping up their work days, ready to come home from the office, the unthinkable is about to happen to 38-year-old Keith Black. He's about to disappear without a trace.
And things like that don't happen in a community like this.
It was very sudden, to be perfectly honest.
Keith's family and friends begin to worry as the weeks pass by, without a single clue as to his whereabouts. But as investigators ramp up their search, they uncover a web of lies and deceit that goes deeper than anyone can imagine. West Bank, a quiet neighborhood in West Kelowna, British Columbia. A gorgeous mountainside town nestled in the Okanagan Valley with a population of around 10,000.
Kelowna is a lake town. I feel like a lot of people in BC knew what was going on in the Okanagan. Some people in Alberta kind of knew what was going on. It was sort of the playground for the two provinces, really.
38-year-old Keith Black settles in the idyllic community of West Bank, after spending several years away studying Taekwondo. He becomes known around town for his training halls, or dojangs, where he shares his love and knowledge of Taekwondo with the community.
Keith Black, he was a Taekwondo instructor. Back in those days, in those early days, Keith really took the principles, I guess, from J.J. Lee and tried to instill them in his students. It was almost like a religion for a lot of these people.
Developed during the 1940s and 50s, Taekwondo is a Korean martial art that focuses on punching and kicking techniques. The combat sport has gained considerable traction since its inception, including being added to the Olympics in 2000. It's a practice that doesn't involve any training with weapons. Instead, students are taught to emphasize speed and agility while concentrating on respect, self-confidence, and discipline.
According to his family, Keith had a bit of a troubled childhood, but he's sort of found his passion in Taekwondo, and he's become an expert. He's a fifth-degree black belt, and that takes years of dedication and training to achieve.
At that time, I believe he was one of the originators. He trained in Calgary with J.J. Lee, who was one of the first people to bring Taekwondo overseas. He was amazing at it. Everybody says that.
Newly divorced, Keith spends most of his time at his Taekwondo training halls, reveling in the sport he loves more than anything. But all that changes when Rhonda walks through his door, looking to restart her own passion for Taekwondo. She moves to Kelowna to be closer to her parents in 1990. But the draw of her chosen martial art is too much to resist. The two seem meant to be, and after a brief courtship, they marry in 1992. Rhonda divorced her first husband and moved to West Bank in search of a fresh start. Shortly after marrying Keith, Rhonda gives birth to a son and they seemed to be a happy family. Rhonda's father, Hans Herrmann, is also into the world of martial arts. He takes up Kempo Karate later in life and quickly excels, giving him and Keith a shared interest.
Kempo is all about logic and practicality. It's about quick strikes and self-defense. It's about disabling your attacker and being quick on your feet. Hans takes up Kempo at the age of 51, which is no small feat.
The weeks leading up to Keith Black's disappearance are nothing out of the ordinary. He goes to his job at a local trucking plant, where he works during the day to support his gyms. It's a necessary sacrifice he's willing to make, even if it leaves him with hardly any free time. He spends his nights where he feels most at home, teaching enthusiastic students at his dojangs alongside Rhonda. After, Keith takes her under his tutelage.
When starting Taekwondo, the first ranking is a white belt, which indicates that you're a junior in the sport. It does go all the way up to a black belt, of which there are 9 degrees. And if you're a third degree black belt, that would allow you to be a senior instructor. To become a third degree black belt, that takes about 3 years of constant study and practice.
Through Keith's training, Rhonda becomes a third degree black belt and an instructor at the dojang.
She always been very kind to me. So my impression of her, I felt that because of my culture, that I see my instructor as a bit of a father figure. The instructor's wife will naturally become a little bit of a mother figure. Maybe it's that tradition's kind of ingrained into me, and I always treat both of them with that level of respect.
She was very well accomplished in her own right. A lot of people said, you know, when Rhonda was at her peak, she probably could have taken a lot of men of her own weight and size.
Several months before his disappearance, Keith finds himself near the small blue-collar town of Exshaw, Alberta, about 6 hours east of West Bank. There, he visits an old friend from the Taekwondo circuit, Howard Stedman.
Keith and Howard were really good friends, had been friends for a long time by that point, 20 years, I guess. Howard was I don't think anybody really had a measure of this man. He was a really strange guy, and he worked at a lime plant there. Hard work, really, really difficult work every day. Just kind of hiding himself out from society. That's the way he liked it. He liked the bush. He only ate what he killed himself. Howard was not a dull and uninteresting character.
Both avid hunters, the two friends often go out into the woods for sport, even when it's not hunting season, which is a criminal offense in the province of Alberta. One can be fined up to $50,000 or imprisoned for up to 6 months if caught.
Rhonda didn't know Howard very well. All she knew about Howard was the stories that Keith would tell her. But I mean, we're talking about a guy who has a big butcher's block in his house, and it's where he cuts up his game and where he prepares his meal, right?
On one particular night after a successful hunt, the two friends get to talking. As the conversation wears on, Howard senses something is amiss with his friend. After some coaxing, Keith confides that he and Rhonda are having issues, but doesn't divulge any more than that. And Howard doesn't pry. He knows when to push matters or when to leave them be. neither man is aware that this will be the last time Howard sees Keith alive. July 20th, 1998 begins like every other day. Keith goes to his day job at the plant, dreaming of the moment he's free to run back to his dojangs. But an old shoulder injury flares up, affecting his productivity. Management notices and sends Keith home around 3:30 in the afternoon. In the comfort of his own home, Keith takes his prescription pain medication to try and numb his aching shoulder. He follows it with a sleeping pill in hopes of getting some rest before teaching his evening classes. He falls asleep quickly. The mix of the pain medication and the sleeping pill take him into their grasp.
There's a danger to mixing sleeping pills with pain medication that most people don't realize. It can have profound effects, from overdosing to even affecting your general mental health. I don't know if Keith realizes that he's taking a risk by combining these medications, even if it does relieve his pain.
That night, a class of students wait patiently for their instructor, a teacher who never lets his students down. But Keith Black never shows up. And the mystery into his whereabouts begins. The community of West Bank, in the city of West Kelowna, British Columbia. Population of over 10,000. Tucked away in the Okanagan Valley, visitors and residents alike are only minutes away from endless hiking and zip lining opportunities in the summer and skiing through the fresh snow of the nearby mountains in the winter. On the night of July 20th, 1998, a class of Taekwondo students await their teacher, Keith Black. They wait for hours, but he never shows.
This is completely out of character for Keith to miss a class. His reputation in Taekwondo, his dojangs, his students, they're essentially his life.
The following day, on July 21st, Keith's manager from his day job calls the Black residents after Keith fails to show. No one answers.
Family and friends continue to call, but no one can reach Keith or Rhonda. This is when people start to worry that something has happened.
It was very sudden, to be perfectly honest. One of the assistant instructor came to me and it's like, "Hey, Andy, can I have a chat with you?" Yes, sir. Mr. Black was gone, disappeared. So he just left.
A week of silence passes. Finally, Rhonda answers a call from Keith's sister, Sandy. She's been trying to reach her brother for some time without any luck, and she's worried. Rhonda brushes off her concerns and tells Sandy that she hasn't seen Keith either. She believes he may have gone hunting, but she isn't sure.
Sandy immediately notices that Rhonda doesn't sound like herself. So there's that fact, and the fact that Keith likes to hunt out of season, although not in the summer. These are alarm bells for Sandy. Something isn't quite right.
Nobody really knows for sure. Nobody knew what to do, what to say, where to go, because this was just, it was unusual for Keith.
Growing more concerned with every passing day, Sandy questions why Rhonda hasn't reported Keith as missing yet. Rhonda claims that because it's not legally hunting season, she doesn't want to call it in. She doesn't want Keith to get into trouble. As she speaks, the weight of her words hit her. Rhonda breaks down. She admits that her and Keith are having problems, financial and marital. Enrollment is down at his dojangs, and they no longer sleep in the same bed.
Keith has spent his whole life building up his reputation in the Taekwondo community and teaching hundreds of students. So knowing that his business and his dojangs are close to failing, that must have been hard on him.
Rhonda also claims that Keith's behavior as of late has been strange. She's found several prescription medications in the house. Medications that may have altered Keith's moods. There's been something off about Keith lately. She thinks he's depressed. It's then that Rhonda reveals her heartbreaking revelation. She believes Keith has abandoned her and their infant son. It's no secret that the couple have had marital problems in the past, and were even separated for a time. But now, with a child together, Rhonda hopes they can work it out.
So I think that played on a little bit of both of their minds as the marriage really started to go downhill. They're doing a lot of fighting. Keith is leaving a lot.
Keith is a good father. He loves his son. So to imagine him just abandoning his son, that's difficult to believe. Depression, however, has profound effects on people, and you never know what's going to happen.
At Sandy's urging, Rhonda files a missing persons report at the end of July 1998, nearly 2 weeks after Keith's last appearance.
When someone files a missing persons report, authorities will start looking for that person immediately. They'll reach out to close contacts, friends, family, co-workers, just to try to establish some sort of pattern so that they can begin to look. In Canada, anyone who has a close connection with someone else, if they fear that something has happened or if there's a public safety issue, can file a missing persons report, and police will take that report.
As the hunt for Keith begins, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police quickly discover they have no evidence to go on. There are no sightings of Keith, no note left behind, no indication of where he could be. And despite Rhonda's claim of Keith's depression, they have no reason to believe he's in any danger.
That wasn't much talk. Maybe Mr. Black just left the relationship and going off to somewhere, have a clean slate, new start. In my mind, that makes sense. How I understand this culture in Canada, it's not unusual that people would do that.
Could Keith have left of his own volition? Did he long to escape his crumbling marriage, his failing business, and his unsatisfactory work life? Or is the truth something far more sinister? Keith's life has been a downward spiral in the months leading up to his disappearance. Enrollment is down at all his Taekwondo schools, forcing Rhonda to work less hours and Keith to take on a day job at a local plant to cover their growing bills.
It's not as simple as just walking away like last time. Now they have a house together, they have a baby. Neither one of them were the type to just walk away from that sort of thing.
Tensions in the Black household are high, stretched to their limits by the financial strain and their failing businesses.
So I can just imagine the stress that he was under. We know what he was talking to his family about. We know what he was talking to his friends about. And I believe he told probably several of his friends he just made the worst mistake of his life getting back together with Rhonda.
This added stress does nothing to help their relationship. Keith and Rhonda's marriage is falling apart. To top it off, it's reported Keith starts mixing medication to help pain from an old injury. Which, according to his family, has a severe impact on his moods. Rhonda tells the RCMP that Keith has not been himself lately. He's been short-tempered and forgetful. She claims it took her several weeks to report him as missing because of his erratic behavior. She wanted to give him time to come home without alerting anyone else to his struggles. Rhonda didn't want anyone to know that Keith may have been suicidal. Hans, Rhonda's father, substantiates her statement, telling officers that he and Keith golfed the day before his disappearance, and that Keith complained about having to go back to work the following day. Sandy agrees that there were subtle changes in Keith in the months leading up to his disappearance. She noticed that he seemed off, different, not like himself. Because of the change in Keith's demeanor, many close to him believe he may have wandered into the woods and died by suicide.
Officers follow all the procedures with respect to the missing persons report, but there's really nothing to go on at this point. So Keith either doesn't want to be found or something tragic has happened.
And something worse does happen. The case goes cold. July 1998. Taekwondo instructor Keith Black has been missing for several weeks before his wife, Rhonda, reports him missing. She believes he's run off, abandoning her, their infant son, and their rising debts. Years pass, and as they do, family and friends begin to slowly accept that Keith is never coming back. Rhonda sells their quaint home in West Bank and moves into a condominium in Rutland, on the opposite side of Okanagan Lake. Rhonda Black files for divorce and sole custody of her and Keith's son in an attempt to move on with her life. Because Keith is missing, the papers are served to his family.
You can file for divorce from a missing spouse as long as you can show that reasonable efforts have been made to find them and a certain amount of time has elapsed. So in this case, it's certainly beneficial to Rhonda to file for divorce because without doing that, she can't do things like sell the couple's jointly owned home, get remarried, and also may have issues making medical decisions or traveling with her son if she doesn't gain sole custody of him.
Rhonda maintains contact with Keith's friend, Howard, and the two lean on each other for support during this difficult time. At this point in time, nobody believes that they're going to see Keith again, the mystery of his whereabouts begins to fade from the community. But those closest to him refuse to forget. In April 2000, the RCMP dive team explores a pond near Kelowna in connection with Keith's disappearance. The search makes the local paper, which Rhonda sees. It catches her off guard. She's unaware of the effort. Livid, Rhonda storms into the police station with her mother at her side, demanding why she wasn't informed of the operation beforehand. Officers try to calm her, but Rhonda is beside herself. It's then that she drops a bombshell, one that shakes the case to its very core. According to a friend of hers, Keith has been sighted in Victoria, the capital city of British Columbia. It's been more than 2 years since Keith Black is last seen. Rhonda's announcement throws the near-dormant case for a loop, forcing authorities to go back to the very beginning, deconstructing everything they thought they knew about Keith Black and his mysterious disappearance. They now need to consider several possibilities, none of them with favorable outcomes. The first scenario asks the question, could Keith have abandoned his family?
Keith and Rhonda don't sleep in the same bed anymore. Keith sleeps in the basement, which is unfinished. It's on a mattress, and it's where he works out.
Financial woes and marital issues have plagued the couple for several months leading up to Keith's disappearance. Keith and Rhonda are constantly at each other's throats. With Keith under constant stress and pressure, did he one day decide to leave it all behind and start a new life somewhere else? Or is it possible that those same issues drove him to end his own life? But what if the truth is far more vicious? What if someone wants Keith dead? Sandy, Keith's sister, has never given up on her brother. She does an investigation of her own as the years go by and uncovers some dark secrets that Keith kept hidden. One of which is that Keith owes nearly $60,000 in gambling debts at the time of his disappearance. Are unpaid gambling debts motive enough for murder? Could a hit have been put out on Keith after he fails to pay off his loans? If this scenario is true, then that raises another question. Where is Keith's body?
Much of Western Canada is covered by mountainous and rocky terrain, as well as dense forests which cross provincial boundaries. So if someone wanted to hide a body, for example, this type of terrain would be very difficult to find that body.
The RCMP have no solid evidence to incriminate any suspects, nor do they have any leads that authenticate their three main scenarios. It seems like the case is growing cold once more. Until November 2001, more than 3 years after Keith's disappearance. Rhonda remains in constant contact with the RCMP, wanting to know more about the case or with an issue of her own. She tells police she's being harassed by the Taekwondo community as a result of her not being ruled out as a suspect, and that she's being followed by people who believe she has something to do with Keith's whereabouts.
I mean, there are people who even now say, like, the day he went missing, they told police right away, you gotta look at Rhonda, you gotta look at Rhonda.
Her behavior in the years after Keith's disappearance become more erratic, and it certainly raises some red flags for investigators. So they make the decision to keep an eye on her to see if there may be anything to follow up on at that point.
What if the three possible scenarios aren't plausible, but a new scenario is? If Keith has indeed been murdered, is it possible that the killer could be someone close to home? After all, no one truly knows what goes on behind closed doors. In 1998, 38-year-old Taekwondo instructor Keith Black disappears without a trace, leaving behind worried family members and students. His wife, Rhonda Black, waits a week to report him missing, citing his penchant for off-season hunting. She's also eager to be eliminated as a suspect, stating she's received harassment from those within the Taekwondo community. As leads dry up, the case goes cold. Time passes. Now it's been almost 3 years since Keith went missing. The RCMP have considered several scenarios regarding his disappearance, including that he abandoned his family in search of a fresh start, or that he may have taken his own life. But none of these possibilities can be proven, nor is there concrete evidence to back them up. The most likely scenario is that someone may have murdered Keith, then disposed of his body. But who could do such a thing, and for what purpose? Given the erratic behavior of Keith's wife, Rhonda, the RCMP keep her on their list of possible suspects. They believe she knows more than she's letting on. In October of 2001, they launch an undercover operation into Rhonda to see if they can unearth what really happened to Keith. An undercover officer befriends Rhonda, slowly earning her trust over the span of several months, chipping away at the truth about Keith Black's whereabouts.
These undercover operations are very difficult. There's a lot of manpower that goes into putting one of them on, and they have to be very careful that they don't let the facts slip that they are actually doing an investigation. If anything inappropriate was to slip out, it could jeopardize the entire investigation.
In May of 2002, Rhonda goes on a day trip with her new friend. They end up in a hotel in Richmond, British Columbia, about a four-hour drive southwest from West Bank. It isn't until the undercover officer takes a scheduled phone call from an undercover team that the jovial spirit of their vacation fades.
Part of the undercover operation involving Rhonda is a ruse about a money laundering scheme. The undercover investigator has Rhonda believing she's part of a criminal organization. And in fact, she's also advised Rhonda that the crime boss has become aware of the fact that Rhonda's husband is missing, and he wants details about this.
Suddenly, there's a big problem, because this criminal organization that Rhonda understands has their hooks into judges and prosecutors and lawyers and cops. They do background checks on other people. And when they did a background on Rhonda Black, they found something in it that was about to blow up. And so she lays it out for her. We can deal with this right now if you tell us everything. This is the only way to get out of this, is if you tell us everything so that we can take care of this And of course, they're all cops.
Little does Rhonda know, the undercover officer is wearing a wire. An entire team is listening in on their conversation, and they hear everything that she has to say, including her confession to Keith's murder. On that fateful July afternoon in 1998, Rhonda Black admits to stabbing Keith while he rests in the basement of their West Bank home.
Rhonda goes downstairs with a knife, sees him sleeping on a mat, and she stabs him right here. Straight down behind the clavicle, severs a major artery. She has to spill everything.
She then tells them that after killing Keith, she cleans the area with bleach, wraps his body up in plastic, and drags him up the stairs, where she puts him in their vehicle. Rhonda then drives for hours with Keith's body in the back of her car. She heads east to the small town of Exshaw, Alberta, straight to the front door of Howard Stedman.
She shows up at his home. They have a little kind of a confrontation, and for some reason, Howard decides to help her.
Howard assists Rhonda in the dismemberment of Keith's body. They remove his head and hands, and then scatter his other remains in the mountains near Canmore, Alberta, about 15 minutes away.
They remove his hands and his head from his body so that if one day the remains were found, it would be extremely difficult to properly identify the individual.
How could two people do something so vile to someone they supposedly cared about?
One of the things that she also tells police is that she killed him because he had a contract out on her, at least as she understood it. They ask her, well, how do you know this? And she says, well, because the guy that was supposed to do it helped me.
And the hired hitman? None other than Keith's good friend, Howard Stedman. When Keith visits Howard a few months prior to his murder, the conversation of his financial troubles and marital woes allegedly leads Keith to ask Howard an unimaginable question. What would it take for Howard to kill Rhonda? Howard refuses, but suggests several ways for Keith to do it himself, to make it look like an accident. This incident reportedly leaves Howard shaken. Howard claims that after Keith left, he calls Rhonda to warn her. Rhonda's shocked, but grateful for the call. She confides in Howard about just how rocky their marriage is. She alleges that Keith beats her. The two become closer after the incident, until Rhonda shows up on Howard's front step on that July day with Keith's body in her car. After interrogating both Rhonda and Howard, investigators are able to locate some of Keith's remains scattered around the Spray Lakes area, about 50 minutes west from Exshaw, in 2003.
Multiple skull fragments are collected at the scene. This is considered unusual, as considerable force is needed to render the skull in that state.
Rhonda tells investigators that Howard shot Keith's skull several times so that he couldn't be identified. Howard, however, denies this allegation.
Finally, almost 5 years after Keith Black's disappearance, Rhonda Black and Howard Stedman are arrested. Rhonda's proceedings begin in 2006, it feels like a fairly open and shut case, with both defendants admitting, in some degree, to the heinous crime. But the shocking confessions are far from over. While on the stand, Rhonda drops yet another bombshell. Under oath, she tells the court that she lied about murdering Keith. She is not the killer. Her father, Hans Hermann, is. She claims that Keith is abusive, and on that particular July day, Keith threatens her with a knife while Hans is over. So, Hans, like any doting father, decides to deal with the situation himself. The rest of her story remains the same. Rhonda then wraps Keith's body herself and drives out to Howard Stedman's house in Exshaw, Alberta, for his assistance in its disposal. Even Rhonda's mother, Annie, backs up her daughter's claim, corroborating the events of that day. The only missing piece is Hans Hermann himself. He can't take the stand in his own defense.
The real sea change in the whole thing was that her father died before the trial.
Both daughter and mother maintain that Hans confesses to the crime on his deathbed.
The defense tries to argue that Hans' deathbed confession is supported by his hatred of Keith. However, the court has concerns with this theory. He can't testify to it himself because he's passed away. And the court needs to question whether or not it's even plausible, given how much Rhonda's endured because of this incident. She's forced to stand trial, and also her son's been removed from her custody. So would a devoted father allow his daughter to go through that?
Ultimately, this last-ditch effort by the defense fails. Rhonda later recants the abuse allegations, telling the court that Keith only struck her once the night of his murder. In October of 2008, Howard Stedman is convicted of accessory to murder after the fact. He is sentenced to 4 years in prison and is currently free. On July 24th, 2007, almost 10 years after Keith Black's disappearance, Rhonda Black is convicted of second-degree murder. She receives life in prison with the eligibility of parole in 10 years. During her time in prison, Rhonda's paired with an institutional parole officer who works with her on her rehabilitation. At a parole hearing, the officer tells the court that Rhonda is a low to moderate risk to reoffend and that she's remorseful for the murder. In September 2016, Rhonda Black is granted day parole.
So I had to keep watching this case over the years, and she did eventually admit it. Somewhere just before she was released after 10 years. It's crazy.
Surrounded by forest and mountain alike, West Bank continues to flourish. Though this horrific murder shook the area, Keith Black will always be remembered for his contributions to the Taekwondo community and by his students.
There are a few of us who are still active, who happens to be his students. We represent the highest ranking of Mr. Black's students who are still active with the art.